Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, February 10th, 2026. We begin on the front page with Election 2026. Four Dems seek to succeed Mendoza. Lawmakers and Lake County official run for comptroller by Ben Zielinski with Capital News Illinois. Who wants to manage Illinois' checkbook as the state faces growing financial uncertainty? Three state legislators and the treasurer of one of the state's largest counties have raised their hand. Incumbent Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who has first took office in 2016 in the middle of the state's infamous two-year budget stalemate, is not seeking re-election. Her departure created the first open primary for the Democratic Party for a statewide constitutional office since 2018. The comptroller's primary responsibility is ensuring the state's bills are paid, a task that wasn't always easy, but one that Mendoza has fine-tuned in recent years. With Mendoza stepping aside, State Senator Karina Villa of West Chicago, Representative Margaret Croak of Chicago, Representative Stephanie Kifowit of Oswego, and Lake County Treasurer Holly Kim are running in the Democratic primary. Each sat down with Capital News Illinois reporters in recent days to answer questions on our Capital Cast podcast. Brian Drew, a Republican from Southern Illinois, is running unopposed for his party's nominations. Kifowit is the longest tenured legislator of the group, having joined the General Assembly in 2013. She is leaning on her Marine Corps service and past career as a financial advisor to argue she is the most qualified candidate. In this race, individuals need an independent, knowledgeable, experienced person for this position, one that has the backbone, like I do, from being a United States Marine Corps veteran, and one that has life experience along with professional experience, Kifowit told Capital News Illinois. She is facing an uphill battle in fundraising, however, as her campaign raised the least money of the candidates in the final quarter of 2025. Croak is leading the financial race thus far as the only candidate to raise at least $500,000 during that fundraising period. Croak has been in the legislature since 2021 and was previously a deputy director at the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. She is a close ally of Governor J.B. Pritzker and has received endorsements from several top Democrats, including the influential Cook County Democratic Party, but Pritzker has not been one of them. We all have seen bills pass and we've seen bills blow up. And it's because of your relationships or if you understand how to get these things done, Croak told Capital News Illinois. So I feel really confident about my ability to kind of steer the ship in the right direction. Croak nearly won the support of the Cook County Party over Villa, who is backed by Senate President Don Harmon and U.S. Representative Delia Ramirez as she tries to carve a lane as the most progressive anti-Trump candidate in the race. Villa has been in the legislature since 2019, but does not have a financial background. Her career was in social work. This is the people's money, and a social worker who has this background, who has the understanding, who has spent all of this time in the General Assembly combing through the budget and understanding how, at times, in order to balance budgets, we have to actually cut service line items that are so critical for everyday people to make ends meet, the social worker being the comptroller makes the most sense, Villa told Capital News Illinois. Kim has no legislative experience in Springfield, but spent 4 years on the Mundelein Village Board and has served as treasurer in Lake County, Illinois' third largest county with more than 700,000 residents, since 2018. She boasts support from dozens of officials in local government and Democratic county chairs across the state. I'm in charge of billions of dollars, Kim told Capital News Illinois. All the checks go out with my name on it, which means out of four people running, I'm already doing the comptroller job. I'm definitely going to be a fierce protector of people and their money. The comptroller does not directly deal with the legislative process of approving a budget, but the candidates had plenty of ideas on how the state should manage its finances. Mendoza herself has been an outspoken supporter of boosting the rainy day fund and has continued to advocate for ways to increase its size. The fund's $2.4 billion balance only funds about 2 weeks of state operations, and lawmakers suspended the monthly transfer to the fund this year to free up money for other priorities in a tight budget year. To continue to put money away for a rainy day when we're in the middle of a tsunami, that's not when we should be putting money away for a rainy day, Villa said, adding, there's no way to prioritize that in this budget. Raising revenue is the central focus of Villa's campaign. She suggested the state implement a tax on digital advertising and retry implementing a graduated income tax to raise more money for social services she said are inadequately funded. Such a measure needs approval from both lawmakers and the general public, but voters soundly rejected the proposed constitutional amendment that would have allowed it in 2020. Kim took a similar approach and said the state's budget goals during Donald Trump's presidency should be focused on maintaining the state's credit rating, which was upgraded 10 times between the three major rating agencies under Mendoza. I would advocate for not only the progressive tax to be brought up as a longer-term solution, especially with years of rocky finances headed our way, with Trump still in government for the next, 3 years, Kim said. Croak and Kifowit said they support reinstating regular funding for the Rainy Day Fund. The comptroller's role is very vital in managing the finances and prioritizing and making sure that we're paying down our debt, Kifowit said. She said the Rainy Day Fund should be increased to at least $5 billion. As the lead negotiator on pension reform for House Democrats, she also said that when bonds the state is currently repaying expire, she wants to dedicate those revenues to paying down pension debt. Pritzker has proposed a similar plan, but so far it hasn't gained traction in the legislature. Croak said she wants those revenues to go to the Rainy Day Fund, and she suggested the state consider refinancing its pension debt. It all goes back to the credit rating. If we can increase our credit rating, showing that we have financial stability, that we have those reserves, and it helps us in the long term with our long-term borrowing, it's something that we need to do, she said. Each candidate presented a different vision for how they will lead the office, with some saying they will use it to push policies in the General Assembly, and others saying they will focus more on the comptroller's administrative responsibilities. Villa said many answers to problems in Illinois depend on the legislature, and the comptroller's job should be to bring attention to the fact that even though we are passing balanced budgets, we are missing a significant amount of money in order to fully fund the services that people need. Kifowit said the comptroller must balance legislative goals with administrative responsibilities. Her goals include creating a nonprofit division to make it easier for nonprofits to track funds they will receive from the state. Croak said her main focus will be on administrative responsibilities. I hope that everyone running just wants to make sure that this office continues to work, because when it breaks down, state government breaks down, she said. Kim said she wants to use the office to better connect with constituents about the office's responsibilities. The problem is government doesn't have really good short explanation videos that are snacks, and that's where we all are right now, she said. And I think having more snack videos of information of what's in the comptroller's office will help people to trust government and understand through transparency in those explanation videos. Each Democrat complimented Mendoza's work but listed off changes they would make. Mendoza's successor will have to be nimble to respond to constant federal uncertainty and be a watchdog over state finances to make sure the state isn't overspending, Kifowit said. She added that among her initiatives, she will be opposing any pension system investments in artificial intelligence or cryptocurrency. Upgrading the office's technology is also a top priority for Croak and Kim. I've seen the software where you can follow appropriations within the budget and understand where taxpayer money is going, Croak said. And I think at this critical time when you have household budgets that are, you know, really tight, and then our state budget is getting very tight, people want to know how you're using taxpayer money. Kim said she will also focus on increasing privacy protections for personal data. VIA didn't offer specifics about her initiatives beyond calling for new taxes, which is ultimately left up to the governor and legislature. She said the job can't just be about paying bills on time. VIA, Kim, and Croak said they support keeping the office separate from the treasurer, the state's chief investment officer, citing corruption problems in the office when the responsibilities were merged under one roof prior to the 1970 Constitution. Kifowit, however, said she would be open to combining the offices if there were enough checks and balances to provide safeguards. Caitlin Klepek writes, police investigate teen's death. The McLean County Coroner's Office and Bloomington Police Department are investigating the death of a teenage girl who was found unresponsive Saturday morning. At 10:46 a.m. Saturday, February 7th, the Bloomington Police and fire paramedics were dispatched to a residence on Canada Lane after receiving reports of a cardiac arrest, according to a news release issued Monday morning. First responders found 16-year-old Mariah Kletz of Bloomington. They attempted to perform life-saving measures, but the coroner's office ultimately pronounced her deceased on scene at 11:40 a.m. The circumstances surrounding her death remain under investigation by the Bloomington Police Department and the McLean County Coroner's Office. No further information regarding her death was released on Monday. The police department said officers' preliminary investigation suggests there is no threat to public safety. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Ryan Strebing at 309-434-2537. To provide an anonymous tip, contact the Crime and Intelligence Analysis Unit at 309-434-2963. Or you can use the department's tip line by texting BPDTIPS, all in caps, followed by a space and the tip information to 847-411. Dan McNeil writes, fire damages Bloomington home. Fire crews battled a house fire Saturday evening in the 1900 block of Croxton Avenue in southeast Bloomington. The homeowner reported the incident at 7:11 p.m. after smelling and seeing smoke on the second floor, the Bloomington Fire Department reported in a news release. Crews arrived at 7:17 and 26 firefighters worked to bring the fire under control. Two hose lines were used to extinguish the blaze, which was mainly confined to the second floor, the department said. Firefighters spent significant time going over the second floor to ensure the fire was out and to salvage possessions. The cause of the fire was determined to be improperly discarded smoking materials, the department reported. No civilians or firefighters were injured. Crews remained on scene until just after 10 p.m. to make sure the fire was completely out. The homeowner, who was insured, was displaced but did not require additional assistance. The Bloomington Fire Department said smoking materials should be extinguished in a deep ashtray or with water. Never discard them in mulch, plants, or trash. The department also reminds residents to install and maintain working smoke alarms on every level of the home and to test them monthly. Olivia Jacobs updates the fair lineup with Matchbox 20 to play State Fair. Pop rock band Matchbox 20 will headline the Illinois State Fair Grandstand on Sunday, August 16th. Band members include Rob Thomas, Brian Yale, Paul Doucette, and Kyle Cook. Matchbox 20 is known for timeless hits like 3 a.m., Push, Unwell, Bent, If You're Gone, and She's So Mean. The band has produced hits in each of the last three decades, dominating radio airwaves and MTV, while garnering billions of streams worldwide, according to a news release from State Fair organizers. Matchbox 20 is one of the most recognizable names in pop rock, and we're thrilled to welcome them to the Illinois State Fair, said Jerry Costello II, Illinois Department of Agriculture Director, in a news release. It's a great fit for the diverse music fans who come to the Illinois State Fair. The band has sold more than 40 million records globally, earned multiple Grammy Award nominations, and sold out performances in arenas, amphitheaters, and stadiums around the world. Matchbox 20's discography includes Yourself or Someone Like You from 1996, Mad Season from 2000, More Than You Think You Are from 2002, and North from 2012, which marked the band's first number one album debut on the Billboard 200 chart. The band's most recent album, Where the Light Goes, from 2023, was the first album they released in more than a decade, once again delivering songs that are real, relevant, and deeply relatable, according to the news release. Matchbox 20 continues to evolve while staying true to what fans love most: honest storytelling, unforgettable melodies, and songs that soundtrack life's biggest moments. Rebecca Clark, fair manager, called this show a can't-miss moment for fairgoers who grew up with their music and for a whole new generation discovering it. Tickets for Matchbox 20 at the Illinois State Fair will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, February 13th, via Ticketmaster. Tickets will range from $75 to $150. An additional $30 pre-show party ticket is also available as an upgrade. Tuesday also is the day for Veterans Corner by Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission. The veterans' call to duty as election judges in the fall 2024 election cycle resulted in the election judge ranks being well-staffed and trained. McLean County is now engaged in the spring 2026 primary elections, and the county clerk's office needs volunteers to serve as election judges. Early voting at the McLean County Government Center main lobby area began over 1 week ago. The need for election judges is mainly on Election Day, March 17th, and this need is throughout the county. The link, if you would like to share the application, is mcleancountyill.gov/797/election-workers-information. It's a long day of patriotic service, but the compensation for serving the entire day on Election Day is $220. The City of Bloomington elections are not conducted by the County Clerk's Office. City of Bloomington voters can just go down the block to the Bloomington Election Commission's office. The link to their information is included at our link above. Veterans, now is the time to come to the aid of your country above everything else. Vote. Are you ready to bond with your dog while connecting with fellow heroes? Devil Dog Canine is bringing canine socializing groups classes to Normal at 1805 Industrial Park Drive, Suite E. The classes are free for veterans and first responders. Classes commence on Tuesday, February 17th, and run from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. The classes will be held on subsequent Tuesdays until there are too few attendees to continue. After that, future sessions would be announced. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to socialize and bond with your dog and enjoy great company. Let's strengthen those bonds and have some fun together. Call 309-846-5112 or email info@devildogcanine.com for more information. In everyday conversation, the word veteran is often used broadly. Many people believe it refers to anyone who has worn a U.S. military uniform at any point in their lives. While that is a respectful interpretation, the official legal definition is much more specific, and it can impact eligibility for federal benefits, state programs, and even ceremonial honors. The legal definition under Title 38 of the U.S. Code is, quote, a person who served in the active military, naval, or air service and who was discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable, close quote. Active service includes Coast Guard and Space Force. The person's discharge status must not have been dishonorable. Honorable, general, and certain other than honorable discharges may still qualify. This legal framework ensures the title veteran carries both honor and clear guidelines. National Guard and Reservist members qualify if they were called to federal active duty by the U.S. government, not just state activation by a governor. Persons whose service at a U.S. military academy counts towards veteran status once they enter active duty. World War II merchant mariners are recognized as veterans under special legislation. These legal definitions aren't just about labels. It directly affects lives. Recognized veterans are eligible for VA health care, disability benefits, home loan guarantees, education programs, burial honors at national cemeteries, and grave markers in other cemeteries, plus more federal and state benefits. For more information, visit va.org/whatisaveteran, the legal definition. Contact a Veteran Service Officer, VSO, if you have questions about benefit eligibility. There are many variations of benefits based on when the veteran served and other reasons. Don't assume, ask. Service-connected veterans who are receiving the P-Tax-342 property tax exemption should be receiving the annual letter from the McLean County Assessor's Office requesting your service-connected disability rating letter dated after January 1, 2026. Those veterans receiving 100% exemption on their taxes because they are rated at 70% or higher will not receive the letter from the county assessor, nor will they have to provide the award letter. You may obtain the award letter by calling the VA at 1-800-827-1000 and request the award letter be attached to an email and sent to the veteran. For veterans who do not have email, ask the VA to send the award letter to their home address. Award letters can also be obtained using your personalized va.gov account or the id.me account. This letter and other documents must be filed with the County Assessor's Office by April 1st, 2026. And the quote of the day. Are we there yet? The phrase has been used for decades to emphasize the impatience of children on road trips. Today's divided political and cultural environment catapults that phrase to a much more significant level. Small groups in our midst, though, through the violent protests, mainstream news media as provided for in the Constitution as a free press, social media, and even our education institutions are pushing the majority to accept ideas and conclusions inconsistent with our nation's founding principles. Are we ready to get involved and right the ship of state? Are we there yet? Stay tuned. Since President's Day is upon us, I thought it would be helpful to see how George Washington perceived what he saw during his time compared to what is happening today. George Washington, quote, "But if the laws are to be so trampled upon with impunity, and a minority is to dictate to the majority, there is an end put at one stroke to Republican government, and nothing but anarchy and confusion is to be expected thereafter." In religious news, we have Fulton Sheen again set for beatification. Vatican OKs event in Peoria for Archbishop, media star from El Paso, by Nicole Winfield with the AP. The Vatican has given the green light again to beatify Archbishop Fulton Sheen, the popular U.S. radio and TV preacher and El Paso, Illinois native, whose path to sainthood was derailed first by a lengthy court battle over his remains and then by concerns about how he handled clergy sexual misconduct cases. After a rare 6-year delay to investigate the concerns, Sheen's beatification can now take place in Peoria as originally planned, the Peoria Diocese announced on Monday. No new date for the ceremony, the last major step before possible sainthood, was immediately announced. But the Vatican's approval now sets the stage for the Illinois-born Sheen to be beatified during the pontificate of the Illinois-born Pope Leo 14th. The Holy See has informed me that the cause for the Venerable Servant of God, Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen, can proceed to beatification. Peoria Bishop Louis Tilke said in a written and video statement on the websites of the diocese and the Sheen Foundation. We are working with the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints at the Vatican to determine the details for the upcoming beatification. Sheen was an enormously effective evangelizer in the 20th century U.S. church, who in some ways pioneered televangelism with his 1950s television series, Life is Worth Living. According to Catholic University of America, where he studied and taught before he was made a bishop, Sheen won an Emmy Award, was featured on the cover of Time magazine, and became one of the most influential Catholics of the 20th century. Pope Francis had confirmed a miracle attributed to Sheen's intercession on July 6, 2019, and had set his beatification for December 21st that year in Peoria. But with less than 3 weeks' notice, the Vatican postponed the ceremony indefinitely. It acted after the Diocese of Rochester, New York, where Sheen served as bishop from 1966 to 69, asked for further investigation into Sheen's tenure and his role in priest assignments. The concerns focused on Sheen's handling of two cases of priests accused of sexual misconduct. Sheen was never accused of abuse himself. A top canonical affairs official from Peoria, Monsignor James Cruz, said in 2019 that an investigation had cleared Sheen of any wrongdoing. Cruz later complained that the Rochester Diocese was sabotaging the cause, writing a lengthy essay that had been posted on the official Sheen beatification site, but was later taken down. Peoria Bishop Tilke's statement made no reference to the concerns that prompted the delay in 2019. The 2019 investigation was the last obstacle to hinder Sheen's cause, coming after an expensive years-long battle between Sheen's relatives in Peoria and the New York City Archdiocese over his final resting place. Sheen, who died in 1979, was interred under the altar of St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. His remains were returned to Peoria in 2019 after a court ruled Sheen's niece could bury him there. Among those celebrating the Vatican's new green light to beatify Sheen was the Pontifical Mission Societies in the U.S., the Vatican's main missionary fundraising office in the U.S., which Sheen headed from 1950 to 1966. Sheen left most of his patrimony, including writings and audio recordings, to the organization, which raises money for the Catholic Church in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and other mission areas. It is profoundly moving that, in God's providence, the first U.S.-born pope is able to advance the cause of his fellow Illinois native, the most iconic evangelizer ever produced by the American Church, Monsignor Roger Landry, National Director of the Office, said in a statement. Associated Press Religion coverage received support through the AP's collaboration with The Conversation U.S., with funding from Lilly Endowment, Inc., and the AP is solely responsible for the content of this article. And with that, we complete the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, February 10th, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.